Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time for Industry Night, our weekly exploration of the world of food and hospitality. Tonight, we get smitten. Food writer and author Deb Perlman has a new cookbook called Smitten Kitchen Every Day. It's a follow-up to her New York Times best-selling The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook. Deb Perlman has run the Smitten Kitchen cooking blog out of New York for about 10 years. The self-taught home cook and photographer documented her life cooking out of tiny kitchens and even tinier New York City apartments. But in the blog and her cookbooks, Deb's able to make her recipes and others and show us that a kitchen is much more than just the countertop space. Deb Perlman was recently in town, and she joins me tonight. Deb, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm a big fan of your work. And you know, you've had a long time popular, the blog Smitten Kitchen, which everyone who's into food regularly checks in. Talk about the transition you've made from being someone who writes on a daily basis on the blog to a cookbook author. And this is your second one. Talk about the transition from that to what you're doing now.
Well, when you make a mistake on a website, you can fix it right away.
Good, the edit.
Good thing my books are absolutely perfect. No, the web is, you can just kind of decide what you want to do that day and do it, you know, pretty much make it happen pretty quickly. Book takes a lot more planning. It's a different kind of muscle, even though the content is similar in that it's recipes and stories and pictures. But, you know, it's sort of fun to work on things that have longer legs, more, you know, I hope the book can be around for a while. I don't. You know, the web,
well,
who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe it's going to go
maybe.
Up and poof.
jury's still out on that. Talk about the different approach to it. For you as a writer, for the stuff that gets in the cookbook, as opposed to the stuff that gets on the blog, is there a different process that goes into that?
You know, the process is roughly the same, but for the site, you know, I might do something like, you know, the week before Thanksgiving, I'll talk about Thanksgiving sides a lot. I can talk about stuff that's very timely in the here and now. For a book, it's not that I wouldn't have those recipes, but they may not be so tied to such a narrow scope. I prefer things what I think of like forever recipes. You know, I'd love to, the idea that the book could be opened in 5 years and the stuff would still feel relevant, you know, almost regardless of season.
With your work, and this is a testament to your voice and your following and people who follow. When you think of cookbook authors, a lot of times they're going to be established chefs, people from restaurants. You know, you love this restaurant, here's the cookbook from it. Rarely do we see rising the ranks of the bestsellers list in the New York Times, people who are amateur cooks who are like, hey, I'm going to figure this out and we're going to figure this out together. Where do you think that comes from people that are attracted to your voice and the idea that you're not those people?
I'm kind of wondering if people got a sense I had no idea what I was doing and they related to that, because that's how many people feel in real life. Or maybe I'm just projecting. But I mean, I never saw any of this coming. I was just like, I'll start a site and just mouth off about food and take some pictures and then say I tweaked this recipe and I didn't like this. And just, I had no idea it was going to turn into this. But maybe it resonates, this idea that like, I'm just kind of still figuring it out. I don't have a master plan or anything.
Deb Perlman's my guest. We're talking about the book Smitten Kitchen Every Day. She, of course, is the author of SmittenKitchen.com and the best-selling New York Times best-selling book, The Smitten Kitchen Cookbook. You know, one of the things you just mentioned just about tweaking recipes, and I love this about you and looking at as someone who's dabbled and tried to master food and have come nowhere close. What I love about it is the fact that you are hacking these recipes, that there'll be something from Food and Wine or there'll be something from another cookbook. And you have the fearlessness, and that's part of the name of the site, but this fearlessness to go and say, I'm going to change this, or I want to change this ingredient or change things around and see how it works. Where does that come from?
I didn't start out that way. I started out by making a recipe that was well-regarded and being unhappy with it or tweaking it. So at first I would kind of say, here's the recipe as it is, but I kind of wanted to do A, B, and C to it. I quickly realized it was much more useful for me to actually do A, B, and C to it. And from there, I just started playing around more and more. But I think of it as more of a, you know, it's a natural flow where, you know, first you want to learn from others and then you kind of get, you know, your training wheels and you start playing around. And eventually you realize that a lot of the things you think you want to make that are original, you know, they may have existed before. So why not try out the 5 best in category crumb cakes and from there come up with your hypothesis of what you would like it to be? Of course, there are other things that, you know, we'd like to believe we fully invent. But the idea of food being completely new or unheard of before, I'd rather be honest and give credit where to where things come from or what inspires me.
I mean, it is inspiration. A lot of what you read on Smitten Kitchen is the inspiration to even have the courage to change a recipe, or and people go along with it. It is interesting because I have, where I think I fail in the kitchen, and I think I speak for a lot of people who are amateurs, is I see a lot of what's written on the page as gospel. Meaning, you know, like I'm like, it says this much, it better be this much.
Well, if it's a Smitten Kitchen recipe, probably.
Are you encouraging people to take Smitten Kitchen recipes and play with them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's two ways. I think sometimes after a long day and you're tired, it's kind of nice for a recipe to take the wheel. It's sort of nice to hand the reins over and just know that if you've got this Cook's Illustrated recipe or maybe one of mine, you might start with, you know, step one and to 10, and it will lead you where you want to go. So I think that can be really kind of relaxing, and we don't talk about that much. I think it counts. There are other times where it's like, I want to make this, but I really don't feel like doing, you know, X, Y, or Z in here. And that's when, you know, that's where it's good to feel like, you know, I would rather make this wrong than not make it at all because I don't have time to make it to the letter. And most of my tweaking is just taking things out that I felt took more time than they rewarded me with, or because I didn't have an ingredient, which I think is real for most of us. Like, you've the wrong kind of broccoli or the wrong, you know, shaped carrot.
Exactly,
like, what are you going to do? Go back to the store? No, you're gonna see if it works. And once you know it works, you're going to maybe want to tell your friends that it really doesn't matter if they follow the letter of the recipe.
Another big part of what you do, and it's been a big part of Smitten Kitchen for the 10 years, almost 10 years that you've been doing the blog, is the space. The tiny kitchens that come with the great places to live in New York City and Brooklyn, mm-hmm. other places, but they're smaller just because size is a premium. And you have embraced that concept and been able to cook a lot of the stuff that we find in these in the books that you've put out, but also the stuff that's on the website. You've been able to cook in spaces that others would say, I can't work with this.
I mean, I think if I started with a really big kitchen and I went to a small one, I'd be pretty mad about it. Like, I would definitely be like, God, how did I ever do this? Why would anyone do this? But the truth is, though, if you ever go to a restaurant kitchen and you see the stations that the line cooks work in, they're not much bigger than their width. They might just be a small counter themselves. It's about organization. It's about planning. Just kidding. I'm terrible at organizing and planning.
I was gonna ask you.
But I also don't put out 100 meals a night.
Right, right.
Like a line cook might. But I'm just saying that, you know, in the history of time and grandmother's cooking, most of us didn't have big kitchens. They're a relatively recent development, and we always got it done. So it really just means that I'm basically just working on one thing at a time, just single tasking. And honestly, I'm not particularly good at multitasking. It sort of works for me.
I wonder if there's something about focus as well. If you're working on one thing at a time, that you get that right, or you put all your focus and love and heart and soul into that one thing and move on, and at the end of the process, it's going to make the dish better.
I hope so. At least if something goes wrong, I know I was paying attention the whole time, and I can say where it happened or when it got weird or whatever. But yet, as soon as I'm juggling a couple dishes, it's always when I burn one or like forget the salt in the other. So I'm sure there are people who can juggle. They probably lots of people have done it, but I'm not the type.
The other part of the cookbooks and also the blog has been your photography. You're not a professional photographer, you're an amateur, but we have seen in the last 10 years, in the time of Smitten Kitchen being one of the premier blogs, an explosion of food photography. Instagram essentially made its name on people taking pictures of their food.
Of lunch.
Yeah, so talk about the concept of what you try to get out, because I love that there are photos attached to all of the recipes, but they're artistic. There's something really great about the way that the photography shows the meal, not necessarily the process.
Well, thank you. That means a lot because I don't really – I mean, I know I take the pictures for my books. I'm not going to say I'm not a photographer, but I don't really consider – I know what real photographers do to make beautiful photos happen, and I don't do that. I shoot on auto most of the time. I'm really lazy, but I'm sorry. But it's okay because I'm not – I feel like it would be a bigger insult to real food photographers to pretend that going through hers. I'm not. But what I do is I just work with natural light. In general, my goal is to make the food the focus. I'd like it to be clear. I'd like it to be crisp. I generally try to keep it by the window in daylight so there's light on it. And I try not to, in part laziness and in part because I feel like philosophically opposed to it. I don't really want to make it look too cute because what's the point of me having some gloriously perfect dish? And now you make my recipe at home that I've promised you is going to go well and it looks awful. And now you feel bad about your cooking. Like, how does that fulfill my goals of getting you to cook something and being excited about it? So I just always want to keep the styling simple. And I felt that if I kept it as minimalist as possible and well lit, hopefully, and sharp, I didn't have to do a lot of flourishes or whatever. And that's it. That's all I do. I just try to take pictures in natural light and try not to. But I love all the food on Instagram. I love all the styles out there. I get so sometimes I'll be looking at a food photo and it's so beautiful, and then I'm like, I don't even know what this food is. I don't care. I want to eat it because it's so beautifully lit. Isn't that an Instagram thing?
It is, and in a way, I wonder if Instagram social media has almost become the new wave of the first wave of amateur food blogs. When you think about your work and others, where you know, even if you think about middle 2005, 2006, mm-hmm. when you started, it's entirely different than what we see in 2017. First off, you were independent. Now it seems like every website, whether it was a food mm-hmm. magazine or not, has a food section and a food mm-hmm. blog.
Absolutely.
But talk about that. Talk about being at the beginning of a movement of food websites and where we're at today in 2017.
You know, I never realized that I was in the middle of a movement or anything. I mean, it was very amateur back then, or it was professionals doing this in their free time and talking about what they see in the kitchen, but it wasn't, I had no concept that this was part of something bigger. But I think I did know on some level that what the real reason that food blogs really exploded was that a lot of the larger media organizations hadn't gotten on the web yet. They kind of thought it was this inconvenience that was going to go away, which meant that even if you're like a nobody with no professional experience and you're out there, you could probably be on the front page of Google results. That wasn't what anybody was thinking about when they were doing it, but just by being there for a long time, you had more authority. At this point, everyone's figured out. Places that didn't have food are adding food. Places that have been doing food forever have very solid web organizations. It's not like a solo site could really compete with that anymore. I don't have the staff or any staff. My kids are fairly – I mean, I try to get them
kids
to help, but
staff,
they're just fairly
right.
useless.
They play a role.
They're cute. They're not so good at web, you know, SEO and stuff. So I think it was really just a moment in time where a lot of people hadn't gotten to the web yet in the area. And so food sites that had been around for a while came in early and got more attention than they otherwise mm-hmm. would have in the current market, I think.
Do you think you could do Smitten Kitchen from scratch now in 2017? If you said right now, Deb, I want to try some things in my kitchen. I want to be fearless and I'm going to put up a site and see if it works.
You know, I have no idea. I feel like I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that it's me and I am so awesome that no matter what I did and when I did it, people would have found me and I would have made a career of it. I have no idea, though. There are probably a lot of people starting out trying to figure out why it isn't happening as fast. But I do think, you know, I mean, I may not be entirely blog focused today. You know, I think you definitely need a nice collection of YouTube videos and you definitely want to be on Instagram. And you could probably even run a lot of your site off of Instagram mm-hmm. or a lot of it. You could certainly do a lot of the writing and the pictures on there. I think you might reformat it. But if hopefully what people want is what you're saying, it doesn't really matter where you say it.
You just wonder, though, the independent voice, because a lot of the reason that people have follow you and are loyal to you is your voice, is the fact that they see a lot in you. They can relate to you. It's not coming from on top of the mountain, that kind of concept. And I wonder if it's harder to get through thousands and thousands of more entries into the world of this world of the amateur food and amateur foodies, that it would be tougher in 2017. I'm sure it can be done, but it's about attracting and having that dedicated following.
No, I think it would definitely be a little more of an uphill battle. As I said, you'd be competing with a lot of places that have a lot deeper pockets. At the same time, I think for a lot of us, our favorite thing at newspapers and magazines are a certain columnist. We all have our favorite reviewers and whatever. And I think it's not a blog, but what it is about that voice. And so I hope there will always be a space for voices, because I have my favorite writers and I don't care if their site looks like, you know, garbage. Not that it's us, but you know what I mean? Like, it kind of, you would sort of find them anywhere and you like their voice and you catch it in other things. I hope there's always a place for columnists and stuff, but I think it would be hard to start like a blog today and only as a blog enterprise and expect it to do what it did in 2006, because it's not 2006.
With that being said, what's next for you? Do you find yourself, are you going to stay with smittenkitchen.com and stay with a presence there and continue to write cookbooks? Or do you see a sunsetting of that project, which has been tremendous for the last 10 years?
I have no idea. My fantasy is that I get to keep doing it as long as I enjoy it. I have no desire to quit a blog. I'm writing cookbooks now. I'm not going to do it. I really love the day-to-day of it. And my fantasy, I'm sure this is true for a lot of people's jobs, I'd like to get tired of it before it gets tired of me. So I'm going to keep being there. I don't have any other great plans for my life. If I ever write another cookbook, it would be a very, very slow experience. This one took 5 years, so I wouldn't be
Wow.
Anyway, so I'd like to keep doing it. I don't really want to go anywhere. I like to check out other opportunities as they come up, but I'm not, I don't know, I'm not over it yet.
Author and food writer Deb Perlman, my guest in studio tonight on Industry Night. She is the author of Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. She's also the author and creator of the great blog, smittenkitchen.com. Deb, great to meet you. Thanks for being here, and thanks for being our guest tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me in.